Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from Counting Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season four. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcasts and join me for the story behind the song.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here, for checking out the series. Please do hit that subscribe button. You know how this works. You'll get new interviews like this one sent your way every single week. You can grab a Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating. Leave a review while you're at it. We've had some great guests drop by lately. Michaela J. Rodriguez and Ron Funches were just here to talk about season 3 of Loot on Apple TV Plus. Broken Social Scene, Speedy Ortiz, Mary Chapin Carpenter, Trampled by Turtles, Marty Stewart, Ian Astbury of the Cults, Colin Hay of Men at Work, Bruce Coburn, Elvira, the Mistress of the Dark, Cassandra Peterson. She dropped by, as did Olivia Allen Lind. You can see her in Wayward on Netflix. Jeff Tweedy of Wilco also talked with Mary Stuart Masterson, Rob Cordery, and Michael Chiklis about the movie The Senior, Willem Dafoe and Corey Hawkins about The Man in My Basement, and Hannah Stocking, Madison Pettis, and Yvonne Orji to discuss The Wrong Paris that's playing now on Netflix. That's what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, it's going to be a special rewind episode. I'm looking back on my talks with Moby, the electric pioneer, vegan philosopher, the only guy who's ever licensed every track on an album with Play back in 1999. He went from hardcore punk and house DJ to ambient sage and animal rights warrior. He's sold millions of records along the way. Worked with Bowie, Orbital, Gwen Stefani. He has scored films, he has written memoirs, he has directed documentaries, and still finds time to pick fights with the meat industry on occasion. Our first conversation that I believe we ever did together was back in 2011. It was quickie. It was kind of a run and gun type of interview at South by Southwest that year. And I say run and gun because most of the interviews at South by ended up being that way. You kind of just, you find who you're supposed to talk to, you grab a corner, you throw the mic in front of them, you're all done in like 5 minutes. And it was an enjoyable conversation, but it was a very, very quick talk just as he was releasing the record Destroyed. So that's where we're going to start right here, heading back to 2011 for this special rewind episode, part one, Kyle Meredith with Moby.
South by Southwest 2011 with the one and only Moby. How you doing, sir?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm well. Let's talk a new record. You have a new record coming out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about this one.
It's called Destroyed, mm-hmm. and there's a book coming out as well. And both the book and the album were put together on tour. because I have bad insomnia. So most of the music on the album was written in hotel rooms at 4 o'clock in the morning. And it's an album of sort of like broken down electronics, but very warm and very atmospheric and very melodic. I'm not good at describing the records I make, but I would describe it as a warm, emotional, broken down electronic record.
From that description, I might think it'd be further down the rabbit hole from where you just left off with the last record. Would that be a fair judgment?
Yeah, I mean, the last album I made was called Wait For Me, and that was also very atmospheric. Mm-hmm. And this is more atmospheric and futuristic, but sort of futuristic from a 1970s perspective, because it's all old synthesizers and old drum machines. So I don't think it's not a particularly modern sounding record. You know, it's not the sort of album or the sort of music that would get played in nightclubs at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's more the sort of music that to me sounds really good on a highway at midnight.
And you mentioned a book was going to be with it as well?
Well, I've been a photographer since I was 10 years old, as long as I've been making music, actually. And I'm finally putting out a photo book. As I said, the album was put together on tour, and the book is also sort of about travel and touring. You know, there's no pictures of set lists, no pictures of guitars, no pictures of monitors or what have you. It's more about how when you go on tour, the familiar becomes disconcerting and the disconcerting becomes familiar, and things that should be comforting end up being very off-putting, and sometimes things that are very off-putting actually become quite comforting. The album also includes a lot of the photography from the book. So they're related, at least in my mind they're related. Someone else could listen to the record and look at the book and not see any connection between the two, but from my perspective, they're related.
There's already an EP out. Is that songs that's going to be on the record, or are these extra tracks?
Yeah, the main song on the EP is a song called Be The One, which sounds sort of like melodic music for the apocalypse. And it's a repetitive, emotional, melodic song that was sort of a centerpiece of the last Paul Haggis movie. I like it, but I'm biased because I made it.
Looking forward to the new record, and good luck with your South By crowd out there. It's a bit hot today.
So. DJing in a parking lot at 6 o'clock in the evening has the potential to be abject failure, sure. So we'll see.
And, well, you did say you're playing bass with OMD too, right? Reunited and back at it and everything? What are you going to be,
I just somehow managed to work with a lot of my heroes, and when I was growing up I loved OMD, so they're playing here and they asked me to play bass on a couple of songs, and of course we're not going to rehearse, and I've never played the songs, and I'm playing an upside down left-handed bass, so as is true for everything I do, there is that great potential for things to go wrong badly. If you expect things to go wrong and they don't, it's a pleasant surprise. And if you expect things to go right and they go wrong, you're horribly disappointed. Set the bar low and be surprised when things don't fail.
Moby from a 2011 interview at South by Southwest. And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith. Special Rewind episode looking back at my conversations with Moby. Now, this second one, you could say, started all of this, the entire podcast. I'd been doing interviews, of course, for years before this podcast officially found its partnership with Consequence in 2018. Before that, I didn't call it a podcast. I just called it an interview series. But they said, hey, let's make it a podcast. And who do you have lined up? And I said, well, I'm supposed to talk to Moby next. And they're like, great. Ask him about what he said recently about Trump being a secret Russian operative. Oh, okay. And so we had a great conversation. And then in the middle of it, it just kind of naturally went there, actually, even to my surprise to this day. And we talked about it for a while, and then we got back to the music. And then the next day, the interview was picked up everywhere. It was on CNN. It was on Fox. It was on Russian television. It was around the world and every website. And suddenly it started feeling not just a little exciting, but then weird and even a little bit scary. And it turned out that was the very first episode of this podcast. That's where we're taking it back to right now in this special Rewind episode. This is from 2018. Moby had just released Everything Was Beautiful and Nothing Hurts. It's part two. Kyle Meredith with Moby.
Great to talk to you. It's been so long since we've heard anything from you. A whole 6 or 7 months at this point, I guess.
Yeah, I've been lazy. I'm sorry.
I like this this work ethic, and I think the idea of touring less and writing more. I guess not every band could do it. You might have to be to a certain level, but as a fan, like this is, I would take this all day long from all the bands I'm a fan of. You know, just pump them out.
Well, it's definitely a function of not touring, but it's also a strange function of sobriety and attachment disorder.
Attachment disorder?
Attachment issues, meaning like I'm not in a relationship and I don't have a family and I don't have children and I'm sober. So as a result, I have a lot of free time. Yeah, all of a sudden those like dozens and dozens of hours a week when you're hungover or whatever, suddenly you have all this time to fill in. Honestly, there are only so many shows on Netflix to watch.
Well, we're all benefiting from it. So I guess I thank you and whatever in the universe for that. And this new record, Everything Was Beautiful, Nothing Hurts. I want to start with the first single, too, with Motherless Child, which, you know, goes back and takes another spiritual, which you've done plenty in the past. And I sort of wondered, what attracts you to those spiritual? What brings those in? Because you always do it in such a great way.
I think it's, at its most basic, it's just the sort of the longing and the pathos and just the emotional quality of those old songs. And there's such a simplicity to them. Because, you know, I grew up studying classical music, and my first music teacher was also obsessed with jazz fusion. And so he tried to teach me to love and to play really complicated music. And try as I might, I just found myself routinely gravitating towards things that were a lot more sort of, in a way, rudimentary and direct and simple. And a lot of those old, you know, the spiritual songs and the gospel songs are just so, yeah, straightforward and emotional. When I'm working on music, I sort of employ the same criteria as when I'm listening to music. And first and foremost, that's how does the music affect me emotionally? You know, because my music is capable of doing many things, but I think at its strongest, it delivers really powerful emotion. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, whether I'm, you know, incorporating old traditional things into my songs or writing things myself, there ultimately has to be that criteria of determining how the music affects me when I listen to it.
Now, with a song like this, like A Motherless Child, you know, if you just go by the lyrics, I thought and looked at it literally, this could be a follow-up to The Day, which you had written actually about, if I read right, a moment with your mother years ago back in the hospital. Am I close at all?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it would be hard to write personal music and not to some extent have it be autobiographical. But I guess, you know, what I try to do, and what I'm not going to say that I do it well, but that it's trying to like take the very specific and subjective and create something that also has a degree, like a universal quality. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I ever succeed at that, but you think of a song like David Bowie's Heroes, and I'm thinking of David because today is the day that he died two years ago, but you think of Heroes, and on one hand, it's this very specific love song between two people, but it somehow creates something so generous and universal. Or even like the best Leonard Cohen songs, you know, where sometimes they're very anecdotal and specific, but somehow universal at the same time. So I guess whether directly or inadvertently, that's what I'm trying to do as well.
I'll tell you, The Day is still one of the most beautiful and sad songs, beautifully sad songs that I think I've ever heard. And again, I think as a fan, when I went into this, that was one of those things like, you know, but there is that moment, like, yeah, you know, like that's the separation from the person who made us, you know, and how could that not be effective, you know, to any artist in their songwriting?
Yes. I mean, it's the separation, again, this sort of this idea that experience can exist in two different ways. Like there's the specific experience of perhaps, you know, me losing my mother, but then the emotion of that, the, you know, the sadness, the grief, the longing, but that could also apply to the human condition, to how, you know, how we relate towards the universe in which we're born. You know, this feeling of separation, this feeling of, you know, confusion and loneliness. I assume that most people spend a good portion of their life, you know, confused, separated, and alone.
More so these days than I feel like maybe a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like the world in which we live is sort of, I was going to say it's going through an existential crisis, but I certainly know as a species, it seems like most of the people I know are going through some pretty serious existential crises, whether it's environmental, personal, political, what have you.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Moby.
I mean, I've certainly never felt despair for something, for people that I've never met like I have in the last little bit. And, you know, in bringing it back to this record, you know, when I look at the song titles like, you know, Welcome to Hard Times, The Wild Darkness, A Dark Cloud is Coming, you know, that's it's impossible to not wonder, are we talking about the bigger pictures and political and environment that's happening? Is that the basis for, you know, thoughts and titles like that?
Yes, very much so. You know, you can't separate the art from the context in which it's created. But what I guess I'm more interested in now these days is looking at things on an almost sort of personal, not me personal, but like on a more like human level, rather than political or rather than structural. Because the fascinating thing about this apocalypse that we're suffering through is it's an apocalypse that we've created. You know, in the past, our ancestors, when they struggled and suffered, it was usually because of circumstances outside of their control, like famine and rotten teeth and hungry bears. But now, everything we're struggling with, you know, it's circumstances and situations that we've created. And it really does beg this question, like, why as humans do we keep making such bad choices?
Do you have any idea of the answer to that right now?
So I don't know if it's an answer, but it's a glimpse, a little bit of a glimpse into it, is I was watching a documentary, which is what middle-aged sober people like me do a lot of. And in the documentary, it was about a watering hole in Africa during a drought. And it's like every creature in this environment, from lions to hippos to zebras to, you know, alligators, they'd all converged on this watering hole. And in the middle of it were these tiny little monkeys. And the monkeys would run up, scoop a handful of water, and run back before they got eaten. And they were like, you know, at the very bottom of the food chain at this watering hole. And I had this thought, I was like, oh, those are our ancestors, you know, terrified monkeys drinking water filled with alligator and hippo poo for a split second, hoping that they're not going to get eaten. So I feel like even though we've evolved to an extent, we're still those scared little monkeys at the watering hole.
Yeah.
We just assume that we're about to get eaten. Every threat is a mortal threat, and we're never going to have enough to eat or drink.
Now, with all this in mind, a big curiosity here, I do want to pull it into a very specific, because while the art does look at the bigger picture and the personal picture, much like the rest of us, myself included, and judging from, you know, I follow you on the socials, that, you know, your day-to-day is still very much like most of our day-to-day of getting trapped up in the news cycles and everything. And there was that moment last year, a very cryptic post that you put last February, where you sort of outlined things that were probably going to happen. And some of that has happened, right?
Yeah. So years of touring and spending time in D.C. and New York, I've managed to make a few friends in the intelligence community. And I guess it was about a year ago, we were having dinner, and they were really concerned, partially based on this, not to go too much in the weeds, but like this Fusion GPS report on Trump essentially being run as a Russian agent. And these are some active and former CIA agents who were, they're truly concerned. They were like, this is the Manchurian candidate. Like, he have a Russian agent as the president of the United States. And so they passed on some information to me, and they said, like, look, you have more of a social media following than any of us do. Can you please post some of these things just in a way to sort of put it out there? And, you know, you look at Dianne Feinstein, who released the testimony from when Fusion GPS went before the Senate Judiciary Committee, and she just released those notes yesterday. And yeah, it does seem like, to what extent there's collusion, I don't know, but where there's smoke, there's fire. And when you have so much evidence pointing to the fact that the Trump administration is really in bed with the Russians in a very pernicious way, and unfortunately, I just don't see people in Congress sort of holding the administration accountable.
Yeah.
You know, it's really disturbing, and it's going to get quite a lot darker. Like, the depths of the Trump family and business, their involvement with organized crime, sponsors of terrorism, Russian oligarchs, like, it's really dark. So
Yeah, well, that was...
I guess we should all, like, fasten our seatbelts and hold on.
Because, you know, when I look back at those tweets, there's almost like a glimmer of a hope in those posts that, you know, something is going to, you know, the hammer is going to come down and things would change. But it sounds like, you know, nearly a year later with what's happened and what hasn't happened and what you do know and might not know, but you don't sound as hopeful that there is going to be that result.
Well, I worked under this naive assumption that our elected officials in the Senate and the House would be interested in investigating possible collusion between the executive branch and a hostile foreign power. And the degree to which even people like John McCain and Chuck Grassley have sort of abdicated their responsibility, that's what makes me really pessimistic, is that they seem to be putting party loyalty ahead of country and decency, and I find that to be really threatening.
Yeah, well, we're all feeling really threatened day by day by day. I mean, luckily, you know, I can, and this is probably, I'm saying this of a place of privilege, I know this, I'm able to wake up day by day and look right ahead of me and enjoy my work and do my day, and most of the time my life doesn't change, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that's what keeps me sane.
One thing I'm really grateful for is that our president is incompetent. Like, just imagine how much more dangerous he'd be if he was intelligent and had emotional impulse control. You know, like, so I'm really grateful that if we're going to have a tyrant, at least let him be stupid and incompetent.
And it just hopefully bide our time until...
Yeah.
If the hammer doesn't come down, then the election comes around, which there's a lot of good names that look to be in the hat next time around. So we can only be hopeful of that, at least.
Yeah.
At least, you know.
Yeah, and like, for example, there was one really pernicious representative, Daryl Issa from California, and he just has announced he's resigning. So right. I think a lot of people on that, like, and I hate being partisan, but like, you know, a lot of, let's say, not terribly honorable politicians are reading the writing on the wall and are resigning rather than going through an election they know they can't win. But like, and then hopefully my friend and neighbor Adam Schiff, once, assuming we win November 6, 2018, then Adam Schiff becomes the head of the House Judiciary, and that is when things start to get really serious.
Yeah, and not to go too pie in the sky big here, but, you know, as far as the big office with the folks who, do you have a dream team? Do you have early wish list?
I mean, my dream, which is never going to happen, is that Michelle Obama will run. Or Elizabeth Warren. And I mean, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris. I mean, I was raised by women and I was raised by feminists, and I just really want to hopefully see a female president sooner rather than later.
Well, there's more momentum now than there's ever been, so we can be very hopeful of that.
Yeah.
The album's going to be out soon. Sorry to ask you this question, but does that mean your mind is already rolling to the next one? Because I know that's sort of how it works with you.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm planning on doing at some point this year is releasing an acoustic orchestral album, like going back and revisiting older songs and doing them orchestrally and with all acoustic instruments. So I'm sort of working on that right now.
Yeah. I cannot wait to hear that, but you know, not to get ahead of ourselves. I'm really looking forward to the release of this one. Everything was beautiful and nothing hurts. Hopefully a line that we'll be able to say once again one day.
Yeah, I hope. I couldn't agree more.
All right. It was really great talking to you, Moby. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was really nice talking to you again. Thanks.
There you go. Part two. That's Moby. And thanks to you for checking out the episode. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you get new interviews every single week and some rewinds just like this one as well. Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. Then after that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where you'll find me Monday through Friday with a four-hour show. It starts at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from the Mountain Goats, Slade, the New York Dolls, Sheryl Crow, Beth Orton, Chawa, Sasami, Ben Harper, U2, Left Field, Wednesday, The Decemberists, The Killers, Fugazi, Living Color, and my interviews with Bob Mould, Mary Timoney, and Lauren Mayberry of Churches. That's what you can hear when you tune in weeknights starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along, and that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time. Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.